Penguin Random House Canada presents Parking the Moose, one American's epic quest to uncover his incredible Canadian roots. By Dave Hill. Read for you by the author. For my father, Robert W. Hill Sr., who isn't from Canada but took me there twice, which is awesome. Dedicated to the memory of my grandfather, Clarence Vincent Blake Sr., who was from Canada, and Bob Cato, who always wanted to live there. Canada. Will we ever really understand it? Probably not. But one thing I can tell you for sure is that I, for one, intend to at least try. Dave Hill, November 24th, 2017. Introduction. A brief message to you, the attractive Canadian listener. There's an idea most of us Americans tend to learn when we are children. I'm guessing you've heard about it. It's that our country is the greatest nation on earth, the land of the free and the home of the brave and all that. We're spoon-fed the belief that absolutely no one outside of the United States could possibly have it as good as we do. Not only that, but almost anywhere else on the planet, we'd probably be thrown in some damp, dimly lit, poorly decorated dungeon, flogged with an expired sausage, and subjected to an endless round of mother jokes. Or worse, for even thinking about enjoying life the way we do, each and every day, without even really trying. It's a notion that's reinforced in school, at home, on late-night TV commercials for used car dealerships of exceptionally dubious integrity, and just about everywhere else until it's pretty much burned on the brain. While it would seem most Americans swallow this idea whole, some never questioning it for even a nanosecond their whole lives, it never really took with me. You see, while I was born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio, the Paris of northeastern Ohio, ask anyone, my grandfather was from Canada, Clinton, Ontario, to be exact. And practically every Sunday at dinner, he'd remind my siblings and me and anyone else within earshot that it was not America, but Canada, this magical and mysterious land just across the mighty Lake Erie, that was in fact the best. I can't remember what reasons my grandfather gave to back up his claim. He might not have even had any. But just saying that Canada was the best would have been enough, considering he was the patriarch, and therefore, according to general unwritten rules of the patriarchy at the time, and or unwritten rules regarding who gets to sit at the head of the table without a fight, was usually allowed to be right about everything. Regardless, I bought it hook, line, and sinker. I suppose to my young mind, it was just a package deal. If I love my grandfather, then I must also love Canada and accept my grandfather's view that I'd been living in a relative shithole this whole time. Or maybe I just figured it was a surefire way to make it into his will. Either way, it wasn't long before I began to accept the reality that I was a guy living in a land that was both literally and figuratively beneath Canada. I bit my tongue as I said the Pledge of Allegiance before class each day in elementary school, and throughout my formative years, I would mumble politely at best during the national anthem before sporting events. The notion of Canadian superiority quickly spread throughout most areas of my young life. Alex Trebek, I'd think as a child basking in the pale glow of the family room television set, now there's a guy who really gets it. Similarly, while my peers kept busy with football, basketball, baseball, and other decidedly inferior and non-Canadian sports, ice hockey became the only sport for me. I signed up to play in the local youth league and watched every game our local cable television provider dared to broadcast. At the time, the American Midwest was a relative hockey wasteland compared to the East Coast and whatever states bordered Canada, so broadcasting hockey games in that part of the country was pretty much rating suicide. For me, Don Cherry's voice was the voice of God, and his sport coats were totally reasonable. And my working knowledge of all the obscure Canadian towns my favorite NHL players came from was impeccable. You could bring up Flin Flon, Manitoba, for example, and I wouldn't even flinch. You gotta love the bomber's chances, I'd respond. It could have easily been considered a form of autism by modern medical standards. It didn't end there, either. Whenever bacon was served at home, I'd be sure to mention my preference for the far more delicious Canadian variety, which to the untrained American eye simply registered as a form of ham. Likewise, if a song by Triumph came on the radio, yeah, I know what you're thinking. What about Rush, Dave? But Rush was already huge in America, and as a result, no longer Canadian enough for my refined taste. I'd be the first to tell you to crank it as loud as it would go, so I could feel the prog tinge hard rock in my chest, the way the almighty trio of Rick Emmett, Mike Levine, and Gil Moore had no doubt intended. I suppose it is at this point that I should point out that while Gil Moore is no slouch, I do prefer the Triumph numbers on which Rick Emmett handled lead vocals. Better to be clear on this now than to wait for the question to be innocently posed in the middle of a book tour Q&A, something I envision to be a mostly family-friendly event, and have a full-on brawl breakout as a result of my potentially controversial stance on this power trio-based matter. And whenever the subject of healthcare was brought up, I was more vocal about the vast merits of the Canadian system than perhaps any other 9-year-old you'd ever want to meet. Okay, I'm lying about that last part, but hopefully you see my point. I was so into Canada that it was actually kind of weird. All of this began to fade, however, when, sadly, my grandfather died shortly after my 12th birthday, and I suddenly found myself with no real Canadian advocate in my life. Sure, there was a kid from outside of Toronto who had transferred into my elementary school around that same time, but seeing as how he wanted nothing more than to quietly blend in with all the other kids in suburban Cleveland, my attempts at engaging him in a conversation about, say, the goings-on in nearby Crotch Lake, Ontario, or the unseemly side of the south-central Quebec poutine industry, for example, were either met with resistance or ignored entirely. Before long, I became just like most other Americans and allowed myself to drift into a state of willful Canadian ignorance. Suddenly, my grandfather's homeland, which I had until this point in my life considered to be a vast, culturally diverse, largely moose-friendly utopia, only a few hours away by station wagon, was no longer something to be celebrated, but something to be feared, or perhaps even worse, dismissed altogether. After all, I figured, we've already got Alan Thicke and Pamela Anderson down here. What the hell else could those Canucks possibly have to offer? Over time, however, my Canadian roots could no longer be denied. Slowly bubbling to the surface of my very being the way I'm guessing maple syrup does if you try to boil it or something. And questions also began to arise. Who are the tragically hip, and what exactly do they want from us? What is curling? And perhaps more importantly, why is curling? And last but not least, how could a country so close to the United States manage to be so very different from us? As I barrel into middle age, probably the last years of my life in which daily moisturizing will produce any results whatsoever, my desire to reconnect with my Canadian heritage and answer these and other distinctly Canadian questions only grows stronger. And let's face it, if Canada and I are going to dance, it should probably be now. Because in just a few short decades, a day trip to some sad casino outside of Niagara Falls with the other diapered and heavily medicated residents of whatever retirement facility I wind up getting dropped off at in the middle of the night might be as good as it gets. If I want to make things right with my grandfather's homeland, it's time to get cracking. And while, sure, it would be well within my rights as a typical American to just stick with the plan and remain blissfully unaware of the many nuances of your fair country until my death, don't I owe it to my grandfather to at least try to get some sense of what he was so proud of all those years ago around the dinner table? And who knows, maybe even get to know who he was a little better in the process. I tend to think so. I suppose as long as we're on the topic, it might also be worth mentioning that, as I sit here writing this...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?